Please listen carefully.
And now, live from a rundown arcade deep in McKinney, Texas, it's the Assuming Positions Podcast, featuring two pinballs with a pocket full of quarters, Kevin and Mikey.
Hey, everybody, welcome to the Assuming Positions Podcast. Kevin over here.
And Mikey over here.
And today on the podcast, we're doing a new thing, a new segment, a new fun thought experiment.
Yes, thought experiment for sure.
We're calling it the name game.
The name game.
Insert game show music here because it sounds like a game show. So on the interwebs, you come across things on social media, and I never want to do them on my social media page, but they're fun to do on the podcast. But basically, you're supposed to take each letter of your first name.
Yes.
Right? And think of something that starts with those letters that you love in a certain category. And I think that the one I saw was for food, which is so generic. But you can do that with anything. And we like thought experiments. We like making lists, and we like coming up with build-a-crews and stuff. Mm-hmm. So we're like, hey, what if we do the name game with nerd media-related things? So this is the name game video game edition.
It's awesome. Video games. Who doesn't love video games?
Yes. So we're going to take our names. We're going to take the letters, and we're going to go and pick our favorite video game that starts with that letter. And it's going to be interesting. We haven't pre-done any of this, and we share three letters.
Yes.
So it's going to be interesting to see if there's overlap.
And it was a funny coincidence to me. We both have five letters in our first name, so we get the same amount of picks. This is great.
Yes.
There is some overlap, and then we have two wild cards for each of us, so it should be fun.
Well, we have wild cards. What are the wild cards?
Well, we share three letters.
I see the two wild cards. I get it.
K, E, and I are overlaps, but I have M and Y, and you have V and N.
Yes. So nerdy. This is so nerdy. It's so perfect.
But I had so much fun thinking about this. And
I did too, and almost broke my brain a couple times. And when I get to my first one, it's kind of, sort of, I don't know, we'll talk about it. Anyway, so Mikey always goes first in these things, and we might as well have him go first because it's the M is one of the wild card ones.
Fair enough.
So we'll start with the letter M in your name. What video game do you love that starts with the letter M?
Well, first of all, there are tons of video games that start with M, especially if you just think about Mario. Yes, most of them are Super Mario, but a lot of the newer ones are Mario. I didn't go Mario this time. That probably would have been the easy bet. This was the first game that popped into my head when I thought, what's a video game that starts with M? And it's a childhood classic, but it's Marble Madness.
Oh, yes.
We maybe talked about it a pinch when we did our arcade episode, when we went to Free Play and played games. But one of the first things I do when I get to a Free Play retro arcade, or when I had my Nintendo Entertainment System, one of the games I played the most was Marble Madness. To tell you what it is, it's really just sort of, in the arcade, you had a little ball roller controller, and you were a marble. And it was top down. You had to go through a maze of obstacles and enemies, and you had a time limit. And it was basically you had to race a marble through an obstacle course to get to the finish line.
Yeah. It was like an isometric game, kind of like Q-Bert.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And you'd always pinch your stupid hands on those rolly balls, but I still loved them.
Or get the bruise on your palm because you're hitting it too hard while you're trying to spin it. No, don't go off the edge. But for me, this was I think the reason I played it so much is because the difficulty in this game was so hard. And I was I don't think I ever made it past the fifth level or whatever. So in doing my research today, I was how many levels does Marble Madness have? Do you have a guess on how many levels Marble Madness has?
64.
See, that's what I was thinking along the same lines, 50, procedurally generated sort of stuff. Marble Madness had six levels. I was one level away. That's it. I was one level away from beating it, and I never made it there just because of how hard it was.
That's crazy.
Yeah, I had no idea there was only six levels, so I think an upcoming goal is I might have to get a King of Kong-style obsession with it and make it a bucket list thing, beat Marble Madness, see the end of it.
Beat Marble Madness. Yeah, man. That's fun.
But that's my end, Marble Madness.
And I don't know if we set up the meeting. These are games we had to have played. So
yes.
It made it kind of hard sometimes because there are a lot of games that start with all the letters of the alphabet, but sometimes, especially when I was looking for V, good luck, Lamp. So, okay. So that's a good one. Marble Madness. So my K, here's the thing. I'm going to argue this, and if we get letters, I'll fight you. But my K I picked is technically called Star Wars : but I picked Knights of the Old Republic.
Oh, I'll accept it. Yep.
That because counts. That, yeah, everyone calls it KOTOR. No one calls it SWKOTOR or anything like that. And also, too, it's technically called Star Wars, The Empire Strikes Back, Star Wars, Return of the Jedi, right? Isn't it technically called that, I think,
yeah,
in the theaters? I remember on the logos have that, like, the box around it that have Star and Wars within
the frame
box.
Yeah.
The frame, yeah. So I'll fight anyway. This, everyone knows this is Knights of the Old Republic. No one knows it is, and everyone knows it is KOTOR.
KOTOR.
So I'm going with it. Dude, I played this game twice. That's how much I love this game.
Awesome.
Because I had to go through it, dark side and light side. So for those of you who don't know, KOTOR is a role-playing game set in the Star Wars universe. It was a BioWare game, and it was initially released on Xbox in July of 2003. So that's pre-kids for me.
There you go.
Which is prime time gaming time.
Yeah.
Let's see. So basically, it's a role-playing game. It's cool because it's the engine behind it is literally the Dungeons & Dragons D20 system.
Oh, fun.
They just put that into a computer, and that's what you use to do it. So it is literally a role-playing game in digital form. And I think most people know this game. Have you ever played KOTOR?
Not. I know of it. I probably have picked around on it, but never like play it all the way through or anything like
you
that.
You should play it. It's the best. It's so good. It's so good. You start off as a scout soldier or scoundrel. Then you eventually get to go through Jedi training.
Awesome.
And you get to pick between Guardian, Sentinel, and Consular. They have the different lightsaber colors based on the kind of Jedi you're going to be. This is all like non-canon stuff anymore because of the bio, but I don't care. They're bringing a lot of it back in, I think. And it's set in the Old Republic 4,000 years before the movies. And you're this guy who is, man, check out the names of these ships. You wake up on the Ender Spire. Come on. And you're dealing with these two, it's got the Mandalorians in it. Basically, the Mandalorians attack the Republic to see what the Jedi got. So that's the Mandalorian-Jedi War.
Oh, nice.
And the Jedi initially don't want to fight them because they're peacekeepers, but two Jedi, Malak and Revan, go and fight them and win and then kind of get exiled and then come back with a giant Sith. This is where the Sith come from. A giant Sith armada are attacking the Republic. And that's where this game starts.
Awesome.
So Revan's missing. Malak killed him. So you're dealing with Darth Malak. And then you go through and you meet all these characters. And the gameplay is so much fun because it's kind of turn-based, but you can set it to be almost real time. And you always have two companions with you, and you get to pick what two you want to have with you. And you can use their powers and use your powers. And your ship is called the Ebon Hawk.
Ooh.
Come on.
Great ship.
Yeah. You got Karth Onassis. You got Bastila, the Jedi. You got a gray Jedi in this, Jolie Bindo, the little R2 type unit, but he's a T3 unit. And the Mandalorian mercenary Candras Odo, the assassin droid HK-47, who's awesome. And you get the Twi'lek teenager Mission Vio and her Wookiee companion Zalbar. Oh, man.
Such great
it's
names.
Great. These are all the characters that you are with. And it has like the discussion tree thing and the choices, which you can either go light side or dark side as you go through. And some of the characters lean dark, some of the characters lean light. So depending on which way you want to go, you choose these other characters and you can kind of turn them either way and influence them slightly. And it's awesome, dude.
You said it's so much fun. You said it was 2003?
Yeah.
That's pretty early times for being able to like go either light or dark and choose a morality in a game. It probably, I don't think it was one of the first, but that's a cool, I didn't know that was a concept for that series. That's pretty awesome.
Dude, the game takes hours upon hours, and I played through it twice because I wanted to do both ways.
Of course.
Both light and dark. And the dark is, the dark is insanely way too much fun, and it is so dark. I mean, at one point, you can have, if you up your mind trick enough, because the different powers depends on the different things you can do. The discussion tree is dependent on your power sometimes.
Oh, okay.
And if you can get your mind trick strong enough, you can have the characters kill each other.
Oh, it's like instead of just the these aren't the droids you're looking for, it's like you hate this person. Please eliminate them.
Yes, exactly.
That's crazy. That's awesome. Yes. But crazy.
Yeah, it's great. Anyway, there we go. There's my K. Knights of the Republic.
If you were going back to play it a third time, you'd do Dark Path again?
Probably. I mean, the sequel came out. The sequel was fun, but the first one is just classic and the best. And you can even get it on, I think they have it on like the app stores and stuff. I think you can literally play it on your phone now.
Then I have to check it out. That's a blind spot for me, for sure.
Yeah.
But that was a super popular series because even in just the Star Wars fandom on the internet, you hear the names Malak and Revan brought up in as much a discussion as you would have used to hear Boba Fett and stuff like that as like the ancient Jedis. That's awesome.
The game's great. The game's classic. It just, they really need to recanonize it, in my opinion.
I've seen campaigns to bring it back every once in a while. So hopefully the next time it happens, it'll stick.
Yep. So we're on to why.
Why? I was my brain wanted to follow up with K because you just talked about K, but I got to spell my own name. So why? This was one of my tough ones. This was a curveball because off the top of the dome, I didn't know. This is the one I had to think about the most because how many video games start with why other than like Yar's Revenge? Like everybody thinks about that, but that game is terrible. But it finally dawned on me and I picked, this is more of a party game, but it's one of the best party games and it's You Don't Know Jack.
Oh, wait. That sounds so familiar.
You Don't Know Jack was developed by Jackbox Games. It's a company that really just made this series of games, but they've been making it. It started in 1995, and they're still making it today. But all it is it's a party game where you answer trivia, and it can be up to three players. You get to pick a funny name that's your contestant game show name, right? And it's multiple choice, kind of like Who Wants to Be a Millionaire. You get four options for whatever silly question they throw at you, and then, you know, whoever gets the most right at the end is the winner. Pretty simple concept. Yes. But the thing about You Don't Know Jack that was great was that there's a really oddball sense of humor to it. It's very much like an MTV version of a video game. Like,
yes.
There's an announcer that makes fun of you if you pick the wrong answer, you know? He sort of sarcastically congratulates you if you're the winner. The music is bonkers. There's a whole bunch of cartoon sound effects throughout it. So if you have it and you have three friends around, it's always a hilarious fun time.
Man. That's the thing that's lost a lot now with me and my boys, the three of us,
yep,
want to play games together. And a lot of the new games, they're all just made to play with someone who isn't in the house with you.
Yep.
I mean,
yep.
Couch co-op and playing video games, sitting next to your friend used to be a big deal.
This falls into the category of one of the greats for me in that respect. So you'd have to figure out which system you could play it on, but your boys are probably the perfect age to have a good time with you playing it for at least an hour or so.
You Don't Know Jack.
But the silly reason I bring that, and one of the silly reasons I picked it, and this is for you, Kevin, but another party game that our group plays is Cards Against Humanity, just like everybody else.
Oh, yeah.
I like to pride myself on when it's my turn in my announcer voice and the way I do my presentation when we play that game. But
yeah.
But this is where sort of Bert Kreischer secret time. I get that whole shtick comes from the announcer from You Don't Know Jack. So.
Oh, that's...
Yeah. It's so silly.
That's hilarious. Man, it's kind of funny because that game is also kind of an evolution of those VHS games. Remember those VHS games that they used to have?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everybody plug in your answer on your four button like controller thing. Yeah.
Oh my gosh. That's a good one. You Don't Know Jack. All right. So we're on to my E now.
E.
So my E. I had to think for a second, but then when I saw it, I was like, that's my E. My E is an old Nintendo game from 1985 called Excitebike.
Yeah, that's one of my alternates. Awesome.
Which we used to call Excitabike, but that's not what it's called, Excitebike. But we used to always call it Excitabike.
That sounds like not a Northeastern New Englander type thing.
It's such a new, hey, you play that Excitabike?
Ah, that Excitabike, man. You got it on that motorbike? Yeah.
So, yeah, like I said, it's a Nintendo game from 85, from the NES, the original NES. And basically, it's just a side-scrolling motocross race game. But the best part about it is you could build your own levels. And that's what I used to do all the time. So there was various little hills that you could put in the way and build your own levels. And you could do it by yourself and try and do tricks. And you could race other mobs. The CPU, and it was just motorbike, side scrolling left or right, go over jumps, try and do tricks. Crowd would cheer in that old 8-bitty way. You know, and just it's exciting. It's simple. I spent hours. I spent hours designing tracks and levels on that game.
Oh, because the ramps and the hills and all the little like obstacles you can put in the way, they were all great. Yeah.
And everyone was trying to see how far they could jump their guy.
Like, oh, man, I made this ramp. I could jump it over this. I could jump it over 3 hills.
Yeah. Or you do a ramp, turbo, ramp, turbo, ramp, turbo, and you're just constantly launching yourself in the air. Yeah.
Yes. Oh, Excitebike.
You're bringing back the nostalgia, but you're leaving out the most frustrating part of that game is one of the components was your motorcycle could overheat. And so, like, you had a little meter, and you had to be always aware that don't overheat because it's going to make you lose. Like, it was like, always so frustrating to me. It's like, I just want to go fast. Quit making me slow down.
Anyway, that's my E, Excitebike. Not much that can be said. The game's simple.
Again, I want to do my E, but I got to wait till it comes up in my name. But I had Excitebike as one of my alternates in case we did overlap. I prepared.
I didn't prepare. If we overlap, we're going to overlap.
Hey.
And I'll just talk more on my letter.
There you go. That means you get the game because you get the default, and then I have to think of something else. But no. My next letter, well, this is one of the ones that was our overlap. But K for me, you went with Knights of the Old Republic. Great pick.
Yes.
But for me, this is another sort of childhood impact that will play every iteration that they put out. But I'm talking about the original from 1994, Killer Instinct.
Killer Instinct!
Oh, wait, no, that's Mortal Kombat. But they had the same sort of theme song. That heavy metal sort of, like, new metal guitar sound. Everything is sort of slick and goth looking. But Killer Instinct was an old fighting game developed by Rare and Microsoft Studios. Put out by Midway in the arcade. This is where I first saw it. This was one of the big arcade happenings when arcades were still a thing and I was actually going to them. Like, I remember the day that Killer Instinct was put in and everybody's like, what is that? And it's all loud and obnoxious, you know.
What is that? Oh. I like how you did it in the voices that existed back then.
It's true.
Check that out, man.
Wicked! Is that a new fighting game? Oh, rad! That's also where all my slang started and stopped. So. But Killer Instinct was the best. Like, for a kid, me growing up on Street Fighter and all that, Virtual Fighter, fighting games were a big part of it. But Killer Instinct was the first with, like, I already said the MTV comparison earlier, but, like, that Gen X sort of character creation where it's all spiky and weird and not just, like, a karate guy or a strong guy. It was characters named Kilgore and Orchid and Jago and Chief Tomahawk. Like, it was like, what? This is crazy. But the reason it was a childhood staple for me is because me and my best friend, Mike, we had it on Super Nintendo. And every day, like, after school, it would just go home, turn on the Super Nintendo, start fighting each other in Killer Instinct. And it probably still holds the record for the longest video game session I've had because there was a point where Mike and I played Killer Instinct, I think, for like 12 hours straight, just like on a Friday night or something.
Oh, man.
Just eating mozzarella sticks and Doritos and chugging Mountain Dew and playing Killer Instinct, trying to learn the combos for every character. Oh, just that's nostalgia for me, but that's a memory I will never forget. It's like, you remember Killer Instinct?
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh.
That's my K.
That's great. That's like, I have moments like that, too, where I'm like, where were my parents? What were they doing? Why was I allowed to do that?
I guess they figured since I was home, you know, in the basement playing video games, I wasn't getting up to treble. So they were like, do you have enough snacks? And be like, yes, mom, go away. We're playing. We're fighting.
Oh, man.
Killer Instinct.
Killer Instinct.
Oh, that's a good one. Get your quarters ready, everybody. All right. So V almost threw me for a loop. And you mentioned one of the Vs that it could have been, which was Virtua Fighter. But I didn't pick that one because I didn't really play that much because I didn't have a Sega. I mean, I've played it because people I knew had Segas, but I didn't have a Sega. So
I got you.
It would be disingenuous for me to pick that. So my brain was breaking because there's not tons of V games. But looking at a list of V games, I came across one and I was like, Mikey and I played that together at Free Play. This game called Venture.
Yes.
So Venture is an old stand-up video arcade game from like 1981. And it's basically a happy face in a dungeon. Do you remember this game?
I do.
It's a It's a fantasy-themed action game, and the goal of Venture is to go around the dungeon with a round smiley face, and apparently his name is Winky.
That's just stealing from Pac-Man, man. No.
Yeah, he has a little bow and arrow, and you're just supposed to go into these rooms in a dungeon and collect the treasure and not get hit by the monsters that are in there. And then you can't spend you're timed in there because there's hallway monsters.
Oh, that's right.
Called hall monsters.
Hall monsters? No, that's just too much of a stress.
Yeah, just called hall monsters. And you see them when you're in the hall, but if you spend too much time in the room, they come and get you, and you can't defeat them at all. They're invulnerable? Invulnerable.
Yeah.
Yes. That's the word I was looking for. So there's traps, there's treasures, you just go through, and it's a simple top-down, think early 1980s. Mm-hmm. There's not much going on there, but it's just funny that it's just a little happy face with a bow and arrow, and you just go through, and I guess the quicker you go through each level, the higher your score, and you just got to get the treasure. Simple, easy, but Mike and I had tons of fun playing it at Free Play,
yeah,
if you recall, because it was like so proto- everything that is like Gauntlet, just like the bones were there, and it was a role-playing game. You got it was fun.
Yeah,
and it's one of those perfect, I just love, one of the things I love about arcade consoles so much, those big stand-up ones, is the art on the side. And of course the art on the side doesn't show like a smiley face with a bow like no. It's in the game, so it's like brave hero, you know, and like crazy monsters and hordes of treasure, and then you get in front of the game and you're like, okay. But that was good enough for us back then. You had to use your imagination.
That was the whole reason they put that crazy art on the side, is like, oh, you look at that and then you sort of use your imagination to put that on these 8 pixels that you actually control that happens to be in the face, the shape of a smiley face. Now, that game was great. I remember playing it because for being an early game, it didn't have that aspect of going into different rooms, and you'd go into a room and be like, oh, no, they're snakes, or oh, no, they're skulls, you know? Yeah. So, it was a great time. Yeah. Good pick. Yeah.
Fun. Thanks, man. Venture.
Venture. And yeah, I mean, even trying to think of it now, I couldn't tell you the video game that I loved off the top of my head. I'd have to get on the internet for a little bit.
That's what I had to do. And the problem was our caveat is we had to have played it. So even if it wasn't something that we loved, we had to have played it.
Yeah.
So I was like, Virtua Fighter. Well, I remember playing that. And I remember at the time it was like kind of groundbreaking because it was 3D instead of just being the 2D side fighting video game. And
yep.
I remember being a big deal, and I remember playing it because I think it came with the Sega. So yeah. I think if people had a Sega, they just had it. Yep. So
especially, Sega and Dreamcast, that was one of their flagship titles.
Right. So, I mean, I played it, but I never owned it. So I was like, oh, I feel disingenuous picking this one. But then I found Venture, man. There's crazy websites out there that have these so nerdy databases of every video game that's ever existed.
Oh, yeah. On every platform, every console. Yep.
Yeah.
But it's good that you didn't pick Virtual Fighter, because I probably would have quizzed you on which character you were best at, and it would have just been like, that one guy with the blue.
I used to like playing that the Drunken Master guy.
Yeah, Lei.
Yeah.
I used to play the, I make myself look bad, I can't remember his name, but the guy that looked like Shinobi, the ninja that would do the backflip and land on you. But
oh, yeah.
But no, excellent pick. That's awesome. Venture. And I remember, if you're ever at Free Play, when it opens back up again, worth your time just to go play that and Marble Madness. Well worth your entry fee.
Yep.
But now we're on to, this is where we sync up. The fourth letter in both of our names is I, but I get to go first. But I'm pretty sure there's not going to be any overlap because I picked a weird one for this one. But this is something I dumped a whole bunch of time into because, speaking of Dreamcast, this was a Dreamcast game called Ikaruga.
What the Huda?
Ikaruga, Ikaruga.
Okay, I don't know what that is.
Okay, well then I'll tell you. Like I said, it was for the Dreamcast. It was developed by a whole bunch of Japanese companies, so I'm not going to try and like butcher those names, but the main publisher was Treasure. But what Ikaruga is, it's a vertical shoot 'em up. If you remember the old arcade games like 1942 or the Twin Eagle games, all those like playing games where you, it would scroll up and you'd have to shoot the enemies as they come down.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
But the thing about Ikaruga is it was one of the early games that introduced the concept, a genre called bullet hell shoot 'em ups. Have you heard bullet hell at all?
No, you're educating me on all these things right now.
Well, it's mainly because it's a Japanese game and it's more popular over there than it is in the West. But bullet hell games are essentially where like the enemies come down and the screen gets filled with projectiles that you need to avoid. Like you have to go a very narrow path to avoid all of them because there's just so much that can kill you on the screen at once. It's essentially a hell full of bullets. But the twist that made me stick with Ikaruga and why it's one of the top shoot 'em ups for me is not only was the music great, not only did the visuals look like an anime movie, not only was the controls real tight and responsive, there was one concept that was unique to this game in that the ship that you control, which is the Ikaruga, the name for the game, has the power to flip over, like do a half a barrel roll, right? It was one of the controls. Mm-hmm. The mechanic that they tie to that is that the top of the ship is light, the bottom of the ship is dark. And they had two types of bullets coming at you. They had light bullets and dark bullets. And the main concept was if you're on the light side of your ship and the light bullets hit you, it gives you energy. But if you're on the dark side of your ship and the light bullets hit you, it kills you or takes away damage, you know? So you could flip to either absorb the bullets or go around them. And it just, for some reason, that hooked me. I love that mechanic. That's the reason I go back and play it. So Ikaruga, bullet hell that had light and dark forces and... Oh, man, like Marble Madness was so hard and kept me coming back.
I'm looking at pictures of it. It's a pretty cool game. Man, when you mentioned 1942, I put so much stick time into 1942. I played the heck out of that game.
Absolutely.
I really, really like that game. But this looks like very much leveled up 1942.
Yeah, the Japanese took 1942 and added anime and a whole lot more bullets to it.
Yeah.
But really cool songs. So, like, the soundtrack was timed to the enemies and all that and different things and great sound effects. Good time all around.
That sounds fun, man. Ikaruga.
Ikaruga. Yes.
Yes. Ikaruga. Yeah, follows the Japanese. I've learned that both my kids are taking Japanese in school right now.
Yep.
And I learned that Japanese words are consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel.
Oh, that's interesting. Okay, and that fits.
That's how you can tell what Asian language you're hearing sometimes. Like, and then when you start thinking about it, everyone listening, you'll never unthink it. Listen, Toyota.
Ooh.
See? Consonant, vowel, consonant, vowel. You know?
Ikaruga.
Tokyo. Ikaruga. See?
Yamaha?
Yeah. Yamaha.
Toshiba? Oh, wow. You're blowing my mind.
Yeah. Katana?
Oh, there you go.
See? All
Samurai?
Of it.
Samurai?
Yes. Karate?
Holy crap. See?
Yes.
It really shouldn't blow my mind if it is the default of the language, but because I'm learning it now, that's awesome.
Yeah, it's fun. All right, so that was your eye. My eye is, it's real. This was really funny because I had to look up what the heck this game was called. I remember playing it. I think it was when I was in college, we had in one of my dorms, it was an all-guys dorm. It wasn't a fraternity, but we acted kind of like a fraternity.
Gotcha.
And we had a game room with some consoles in it. And I used to go in there all the time and play video games. And one of the games I played was a game called Indiana Jones Greatest Adventures.
Greatest Adventures? And I don't think I've heard of that. Okay.
Okay. So have you ever heard of Super Star Wars?
Yes.
All right. So Super Star Wars and Indiana Jones Greatest Adventures use the same engine. Basically, Super Star Wars came out. And they said, now let's do this with Indiana Jones.
Ah, same property. Same owners. Yeah, there you go.
Yeah, so it's the same thing, all Lucasfilm properties. So it's basically Super Star Wars, but with Indiana Jones.
Oh, fun.
And the funny thing was, is I was thinking about it. I was like, oh, an Indiana Jones game. So I was like, oh, what's that Indiana Jones game I had on the Xbox? And I looked that up, and I was like, I remember playing that, but that wasn't the game I was thinking of. That one's more of kind of a... little role play type of game.
Gotcha.
But I was thinking, I was like, the one I'm thinking of is a side scroller and it's kind of like leveled up Pitfall, but with Indiana Jones. And I'm like, what the heck was that game? It was driving me crazy. And finally, I found a list of all the Indiana Jones games and I found it. And I was like, that's it. It was called Indiana Jones Greatest Adventures. I had no idea because I didn't own it. It was just in the game room. And it was, you know, I just threw it in because I'm like, I'm playing this Indiana Jones game. So came out in 1994. And it was developed by Factor 5, which is kind of funny to me because they still exist and are around.
Yep.
It's funny when you see these old developers that you're like, oh, wow, you guys have been around forever. So like I said, it's based on the Super Star Wars engine, and it's a side-scroller. And like, if you guys, if you know what Pitfall is, it's literally just leveled up Pitfall with like 10 years later and better graphics. And you have your bullwhip. That's your main mode of attack. You can also punch enemies or roll into them.
Nice.
And use the bullwhip to swing. Sometimes you can find his gun, but it's one of those things that only has so much ammo before it goes away. Yeah. And I think you can also find grenades too. But basically, it's a side scroller and you're going through the maps, and it's kind of weird because it's strangely faithful to the movies.
Okay. Because
it's supposed to be his greatest adventure. So it has all parts of all three movies in it. It has the one of the first maps as the roly ball, the big boulder.
Gotcha.
That rolls after you and stuff. And then it also has like a level where you're flying a plane side scroller.
Nice.
Because he flies a plane once with his dad. And, as a minecart one, Temple of Dune minecart one level, and then also like a raft level, which was that in Temple of Doom, or that was the raft? What was the raft in?
Temple of Doom.
I don't remember. It was Temple of Doom, yeah. So that's it. It was fun. I played a lot, put a lot of stick time in that.
I said I didn't recognize that. I am familiar with Super Star Wars, but you were saying that mine level, like I have a mental visual of that. So I think I may have played it at one point or another because I knew, like you said the level and I was like, I know that level. I remember playing it.
That's the thing is I was sitting here going like, there was an Xbox Indiana Jones game that I had and I played, but that wasn't the one I was thinking of, because when I looked it up and saw screenshots, I'm like, no, the one I had has a little, he was on the side of him and he had a whip. And so Indiana Jones Greatest Adventures.
That's awesome. And did you say it was officially licensed by Lucasfilm, or you said Factory 5? But
well, Factor 5 is the one who did it. It was developed by Factor 5 and published by JVC Musical Industries.
Oh, okay.
So its release coincided with Super Star Wars, also released by JVC and LucasArts.
Ah, there it is. Okay.
And the same platform style as Super Star Wars Trilogy. So yeah, it's all in the same family there. So
well, if it was on the Xbox, I'm curious if we'll see it on the Xbox Game Pass. That sounds like a fun, easy download for a Sunday afternoon.
So well, no, it was actually on the SNES.
Oh, okay. Even better. That means I have to go to my Nintendo Switch, see if it's on the Nintendo store.
So yeah, that and Super Star Wars. I spend a lot of time playing those games.
Oh, I remember the Star Wars one, because isn't there one like a level where you ride on a Tauntaun as a side scroller?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, yeah. The Super Star Wars is the same thing. It's just, you know, the Indiana Jones one had all his three movies, and the Super Star Wars had all those three movies.
Yeah. And you played through them almost in chronological order.
Yeah.
I got you.
They're platformers, and I remember Super Star Wars had a level where you're climbing up a sand crawler or something like that.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah. Oh.
Yeah.
It's weird how I have those mental, like I still have those mental visuals, but they don't come up until somebody says, hey, remember Super Star Wars? And my brain goes, yes, you do. But yeah, if I can't find it on the Nintendo Switch, maybe I'll just find an emulator and play through it, because I love Pitfall. That was another one of my classics. But to have Indiana Jones on as a skin of it sounds like a blast.
It is super fun.
But now we are on to our last letters in our names. For me, that is E. And there's a bunch of E games. There's a bunch I had as alternates, like Excitebike, which you brought up. But for me...
Excitebike.
Excitebike. Hey, man, Excitebike. That's totally a New Englander thing. but for me, this is a Super Nintendo game.
Super Nintendo?
Did I say Nintendo?
No, you said Nintendo. I remember. Do you remember kids calling it Super Nintendo?
Oh, yeah,
it used to be a thing. Sorry, just these old memories of pronouncing things like Excitebike wrong.
Yeah, Super Nintendo, man. No, we always called it SNES, SNES. But
yes,
for Super Nintendo, developed by Shiny Entertainment, which is a company, one of those companies I don't think is still around. But it was a really unique game based on a comic book called Earthworm Jim.
Oh, yeah.
He's such a mighty guy. Earthworm Jim. He rockets through the sky. Not only was it a comic book, it was a TV show and a video game. And the TV show had a theme song that I still know all the words to. But if you don't know Earthworm Jim, it's a 90s stylized absurdist comic that is essentially an earthworm that is peeking out the top of this sort of super soldier NASA astronaut spacesuit. And he has a ray gun. He has a bad attitude. He has the Han Solo, like, I'm going to make quips after everything I do, you know. But he was also kind of Indiana Jones, because in this game, not only did you have your ray gun, you had the ability to use the head of Earthworm Jim, which is an earthworm, as a whip, or as like you could sling it to a tree and swing from your head and then put it back. Like, we're talking 90s comics. This is just weird and sort of absurdist. And then it was a side-scrolling platform game, but you had obstacles like flaming cows, and the main bad guy was a space crow, and there were booger projectiles and car tire piles that you could bounce off of, and weird-looking jelly spikes that you had to avoid. It was so bizarre. I think I was either preteen or early teenager when it was out, so like right in my wheelhouse of like, this is so weird and insane that I love every second of it.
What was going on back then with you got the Earthworm Jim, that, like you're saying, that kind of 90s really kind of goofy
Ren and Stimpy, like
Ren and Stimpy, I was gonna say,
Too Much Coffee Man,
and Toe Jam and Earl.
Oh, Toe Jam and Earl, yes.
Yeah, there's just so much of that, the kind of proto SpongeBob stuff.
I can't explain it, but you said Toe Jam and Earl, and that made me realize, to use a cheesy phrase, I think Toe Jam and Earl walked so that Earthworm Jim could run, because like, it's that same style of game. If you like Toe Jam and Earl, you will love the Earthworm Jim video game.
Oh, man. I'm looking at pictures on my phone of Earthworm Jim, and there's this funny picture of Earthworm Jim looking at Sonic.
With his crazy eyes, probably giving him the side eye or the angry eyebrow. Yep.
Yeah, that's funny.
I like the TV show was silly. The comic books, I had a few of them, but for me, Earthworm Jim was always this video game. And it was so, because it was so silly and weird, it was also really hard again. And I never beat it, but always tried to, so sunk a lot of hours into it.
Mikey likes the challenge. That's what I've come to find out.
That's where the replay value comes in. It's like, I got to do better than I did last time.
Yeah, well, that's a good thing. All right. Earthworm Jim. So that was your name is done.
My name is all spelled out. I'm glad I remembered how to do it.
So my last one is N, and this was easy and fast, and I barely had to think about it.
Nice.
So I picked what's known as one of the greatest sports games of all time. On a video game, NHL 94.
NHL 94 for the Sega Genesis?
It was on the Genesis, it was on the SNES. It was, on both of them. Those were the two dominant ones at the time it came out in 94. So
yep.
It was on both of them. And this game, man, I don't know if you know how popular this game was. This game elevated hockey itself. Like, literally, this game made some hockey players popular because they were good in the game.
Oh, wow. Okay, cool.
And one of them is Jeremy Roenick. Jeremy Roenick said that the only reason he's famous is because of that video game.
That's hilarious.
Because he was rated really high in that video game. So there was like a 1 to 100 level for the players in there. And he was like a 98 or 99 or something like that. But NHL 94 is by EA Sports.
In the game.
and it was officially licensed by the NHL and has all the NHL teams in it, all the NHL players. And it's, most hockey games used to be like side scrolling, but this wasn't the first one that was like top down. Like, you're looking over the ice, over like third person almost of the players, kind of at a bird's eye level. And that was innovative at the time. No game had done that before. It's almost like you're playing bubble hockey.
Nice.
But, you know, on a video game, because you're just behind those guys. And I think it was like maybe the second, third. There had been NHL other ones, but this one really hit right. The way the game was played, they added in real hockey stuff, like you could do a one-timer or you could pass to a guy and immediately shoot it.
Oh, cool.
And there was so much playability and couch co-op stuff. And this is also a game that was in that dorm room, and we actually had NHL 94 tournaments because they had a couple play modes, and one of the play modes was a playoff series. So you could like pick your team, and then you'd sit there and you'd like play each other, and we kept it marked on a board. And I think there was a prize at the end. I forget what the prize was, but basically I played this game so much, and it had editability in it, and you could make characters and players and stuff on there. And man, it was so much fun, this game. And what's really cool is that on Game Pass, the EA Game Pass, they have NHL 94 Rewind, which is NHL 94, but with all modern teams and players.
That's awesome.
But it's exactly the same as it was. And we've been playing it a little bit at the house. So, and it's so much fun. I mean, my kids play hockey for real themselves. Mm-hmm. And we've played other NHL, like I have NHL 17, 8, 19, 20. I don't know which one I have. One of the NHL games. And they're like, nah, we'd rather play real hockey. But this is so arcadey and fun that they really were digging on it. So it's kind of cool. But this game is also the game that's been, it was in
Mallrats.
Mallrats, yeah. This was the one that was in Mallrats. And I think maybe Swingers or there's a couple movies that this was in. So it's really well known as one of the best video games of sports video games ever made. So
that is funny that it was so popular that it, you know, it helped the franchise and the players itself, and it's so popular like they put it in movies. That's great.
Yeah, I always remember, like, because you could, it had like blood you could turn on and off. Like the guy would get hurt and a pool of blood would come under his head.
Oh, no.
I think that's in Mallrats or one of those movies. It's in one of those movies.
Yeah,
I forget the scene exactly, but oh man.
Did you have a default team, or is there a default team that you pick now that you go back to it?
Well, I play the Bruins.
There you go.
I still play the Bruins. This is where my best memory was in that dorm game room, having the tournaments and stuff, and going down there and looking at the board and seeing who was up next, and you'd be playing a best of seven series against them.
It's such a college dorm thing to do, but it's awesome. Yeah.
Yeah, so much fun.
Means you need to start a house tournament between you and your boys. Everybody, you know, you can't do a bracket, but you could probably do like wins out of however many wins and do it that way.
We totally could. And it's so much fun because as soon as I launched it up, I was like, put the goalie on auto. You don't want to have to control the goalie. It's impossible.
That could be the wild card for the Stanley Cup version of the house tournament, is that no auto goalie. You got to do this all on your own.
Oh, it's so hard without auto goalie on. Anyone who knows this game is listening, they know.
NHL 94. That's great. And you've spelled your name.
I spelled my name too. So, Mikey, M-Y-K-I-E, what were your games?
My games were Marble Madness, You Don't Know Jack, Killer Instinct, Ikaruga, and Earthworm Jim.
And mine were Knights of the Old Republic, Excitebike, this wicked cool game, Venture, Indiana Jones, Greatest Adventures, and NHL 94. And we want to know what your games are.
Yeah.
Spell your name out, and hopefully you have a nickname or a short name. But hey, man, if you want to do your whole name, Horatio, that's not even a very long name. That's a long name.
Maximilian.
Go for it, Maximilian.
You got to pick like 3M games. That's crazy.
Here's a hint. Pick Mass Effect for one of them.
There you go.
So you can let us know what games you love by hitting us up on our social medias at Assuming Pod, Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter. We're most active on Instagram. You can also send us a letter via electronic mail to assumingpositions@gmail.com. We want to thank everyone for listening out there. Please continue to like and share. Let us know what you think. If you have any ideas on what'd be fun to talk about next, let us know. We'll probably talk about it. I think we might do some, if you like the name game, let us know, because we can do name game TV. We can do name game movies. We can do name game breakfast foods.
Cereals. I was just about to say that. That's crazy.
Maybe. Is there an eye cereal? I don't think there's an, is there an eye cereal?
Icky Loops. I don't know.
Icky Loops. Yum.
They're not that great.
They're kind of icky. Okay, we're going down dad joke lane here. Anyway, so well, thank you guys so much for listening. We also want to thank that guy, Brad, for doing our announcing, Not Scott Production for our equipment, Jazzar for our music, and we hope you guys have a great rest of your week. Go play some video games based on the letters in your name.
Yeah, or go play the name game. Name game. We need a theme song.
Live from Hollywood Studios in Burbank, California.